All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, welcome back to Up North News Radio. Pat Kreitlow, along with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who's joined us so often that we thought for, you know, one show near the end of the year around the holidays, she should just sit in there here the whole time, which is fine because you kind of have a guest pass, you know, one of those that you can just kind of come and go as you please, basically, you know.
You know, sometimes when I listen in the morning, I just think to myself, like, it's almost like I'm having coffee with Pat. Every
morning. I was just going to say, it's almost like I expect to turn around and have you just stealing my pot of coffee and filling it up and doing that's something like that. But instead, we're on opposite ends of the state where we only got to see each other one time all year when you and I and Kirk got to meet in Chippewa for an interesting first experiment at a kitchen radio show. We will have to try that again.
I loved it. It was so much fun to just all be in the same space and see, like, there's one thing about Zoom. Zoom has its place, but we all got a little tired with too much Zooming and started to realize how much it means to all of us to be together sharing that proximity. And man, I just loved it. It was so much fun.
It's true. And I really gushed about the Civic Media Christmas party. The fact that we could finally get everybody together from all the various cities. And even though I got sick as a dog afterwards, and I probably would have anyway, we went to a comedy club. We were going up and down State Street, you know, so you're going to get sick in the wintertime anyway. It was totally worth it. It was so good to just actually see people face to face and have those conversations. You just want people to be careful. Get immunized, for goodness sakes, people. That number is still so ridiculously low. COVID, flu, you name it.
Thanks for bringing that up, because it's the triple-demic. COVID is still very real. Flu is huge and people aren't vaccinated to the degree that we need them to be. And RSV is a giant problem, especially for little kids. So it's the holidays. We all want to be together. But if you feel sick, please refrain from spending time in large groups of people. Wear a mask if you are at risk, and just support and love each other for whatever is going on in your life. We will have more time together. We can always connect virtually if that's what needs to happen. But first and foremost, just please take care of yourself.
You know, I think we all are better than we used to be, but still not as good as we should be when it comes to backing out of a plan and saying, I'm not feeling 100% and I don't want to get people sick, or I don't want to get sicker, as the case may be. I do think more people do that than before, but there is definitely room for improvement on that front.
Mm-hmm. I know, it's tricky, because I'm a doctor, and there have been times where I've gone to work not feeling great, because if you cancel your day at work, there's a whole day's full of patients who were planning and taking time off and expecting to go see you. But on the other hand, you don't want to get them sick. So it's really made me think about my approach and how I would do things differently. And maybe it is time to wear a mask when I'm feeling just a little bit under the weather. That's what I've started practicing.
Sure. Or just, you know, when you're in the grocery store or something like that. That's interesting that you would make that admission, being married as I am to a physician, but one who never, ever, ever gets sick. No matter what, you say, boy, you look like hell. And she'd be like, nope. Not sick. If you're in constant denial, you know, you never have to miss a day.
She's got good genes, though. I mean, she's a farm girl.
Oh, I was going to say, it's those farm girl genes, because again, the cows aren't going to milk themselves. You're going out there, you know, no matter what.
Yep.
Now you're going to be not taking part in usual holiday traditions, but I wanted to ask anyway, that when you are sharing custody of kids, as so many other people do, when it is one of those years where you've got a big brood under one roof, is there something that you really look forward to most?
I just love being together and having a big meal. We did it actually last weekend. My son came back from Japan. Another son graduated from college. My other two little guys had other big things going on. So we just thought, this is a day that's open. Let's have a celebration. So I invited my sister and her husband and my brother, and actually my ex-husband and his girlfriend came over, and we just had a meal with no presents. It was just about being together. And it was wonderful. The conversation, just being together. That's all that mattered.
You know, one of the things that I think was a little tough to adjust in our marriage was that Sherry's family is, I mean, they are a family of huggers. They are mm-hmm. chatting all the time. There's all these conversations. My family is less huggy, shall we say, uh-huh. less conversant. But the point is, we just like to be with each other. And I think a few times we'd drive away from a gathering and Sherry would be like, you know, not that we were all mad at each other, but she's like, you guys hardly ever talk. And I'm like, we don't feel the need to. It's just, we just want to be in the room together. Uh-huh. And that way, when something, you know, like comes on TV, we can go, huh, can you believe that? You know, and then you might say something else. But I mean, other families, it's just, it's talk all the way through, especially in families like hers where, I mean, as soon as the meal is put away, 7 hours of sheep's head will follow at the table.
That's awesome. And it goes by like 20 minutes.
Well, if you're playing the game, maybe. If you're waiting for somebody because you're ready to go home, but they're just going to do one more round.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't feel that instant after all. Hey,
that's
we're gonna...
where you find the couch, Pat, the couch and the football game.
I know where the football games are. I got no problem there. And now, I mean, again, in the early days, I didn't have a cell phone to read. Now I can surf stuff all day long. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break. Kristen Lyerly and I are going to talk more about the holidays, the end of the year, some of the things that made news in 2022 as we get set to turn the page on another calendar already here on the year 2020, part three, I guess you could call it, right after this, Higher Ed UpNorth News Radio.
When you're away from your radio, you're never far away from the show. Catch our live stream at our Facebook page. Search for Up North News WI. We'll be right back. You can reach our show at 715-388-7155 or send an email to radio@upnorthnewswi.com.
Welcome back to Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us as well, and her weekly hometown health segment is coming up as well. And it sounds like such an intriguing guest, Robert Pine, he's from St. Norbert College, right? And
directs the Norman Miller Center for Peace, Justice. It's a really long title.
Oh, I got it. Here it is. The Norman Miller Center for Peace, Justice, and Public Understanding.
That's what it is. It is a brilliant little resource at St. Norbert College in De Pere. And Bob is just this. Yeah, I have a hard time even engaging in conversation with him as somebody who is producing conversation, because I just want to sit and listen, because he comes with all of this education and experience and insight. And I think our conversation that you'll hear later really reflects just what a brilliant person he is.
Well, and people go, well, wait a minute, what's the tie into hometown health? I mean, uh-huh. really, if you're all fighting with one another, that's hardly a healthy community to begin with. And talking right. about the need for, you know, what does a healthy community do? It values human dignity, it values education, it values responsibility, and engages in peace building. And those are the values of the Norman Miller Center and St. Norbert College. And so, Robert is uniquely qualified to talk about what would really make for a healthy community.
Yeah, and creating those conditions that we all want. We all want to embrace our human rights to health and everything else that makes life worth living. I think he called it human flourishing. We all believe in that. It's just a matter of connecting those dots to actually making it happen in real life.
Yes. So he's going to give us a positive view of what we can be in a community, which we're going to need after a year like this that hasn't always had positive news. And you know, like it or not, much like Kristen sometimes wonders if she's been typecast, but you know, where we first met you and really, really needed to talk to you and learn from you was because of the Dobbs decision and, you know, what it did to women, what it did for healthcare in this country, for fairness and equality. And this is something that doesn't go away just because the election is over, which, again, I'm glad we got to cross paths with you as a result, but it means there's a part of you that is I guess, forever changed until those rights are won back.
Women's rights, reproductive health has always been an issue my entire life. So the last election was just another election. And luckily here in Wisconsin, we got the governor that we desperately needed. We got the attorney general that we desperately needed. And in the spring, hopefully we will get the Supreme Court justice that we desperately need in order to right what's happening in the state. But, you know, I know that this is a long game and it is probably not going to be resolved in my lifetime. I would love to see it and I'll continue to fight for it. But, you know, I was here before Dobbs. I'm here after Dobbs. I'm going to be here long into the future, Pat. You're stuck with me now.
We should be so fortunate. Don't threaten me with a good time. You know, to have OBGYNs like you who are willing to be very public about the importance of issues like this. And I think that's another part of the story I want to talk about. And I've obviously seen this in the past as a candidate myself, is meeting people who were inspired to jump in. Finally, you know, one of my favorite conversations earlier this month was with a woman who is starting the hashtag Dirt Road Democrat. Jessica Piper is her name, an educator who just said somebody's got to step up and run as a Democrat here in rural Missouri. And now she's quite the advocate for what Democratic candidates need to do. And it starts with a single person stepping up and saying, I'll do it. And look at the people you've introduced us to this year who were helping out in some way, shape, or form, either from the Dobbs decision or just other things that made them say, I can't stay on the sidelines anymore. That had to be one of the more rewarding parts of your year.
Absolutely. That group of women up in Door County in particular, who had never been political. I mean, face it, people are uncomfortable with politics. So when political things are crammed down your throat and you know that they are affecting your life, you have two choices, like run and hide or fight. And these women were like, we're in this 100%. They organized, they figured out what they needed to do. They talked to people, they knocked doors, they had parades, they hosted candidates, and they made a difference in their community. And just like me, they're not going away because it's about so much more than an election. It is about creating community in a place where they know that their voices really, truly do matter. You're right, Pat. That is one of the most fulfilling things that's happened this year.
And if there's been a theme that recurs through this radio show since we started in August, it is about having conversations and that is really the only way anything is going to get done. It's not going to happen with just a single person going into the voting booth, though that is a powerful thing, or a single person, you know, writing a check to a cause, although it is a powerful thing. But the thing that's really going to have to happen is for people to have conversations, like all of those conversations that led to women and their allies deciding to vote this year or vote differently this year because of each one of those talks with a friend or a neighbor or a trusted soul.
A conversation between two people who are interacting with each other and looking at each other and reading their faces and nonverbals and understanding how to craft language in order to create a meaningful message instead of just shouting into the social media chasm, insults and ugly things. You know, there was a text yesterday, maybe 2 days ago, not a text, a tweet. Representative Matt Gaetz out of Florida. And he made some terrible comment about how if you see somebody wearing a mask in Florida, it's because they're ugly or something like that. Yes. And I thought, man, and it was on his official Twitter site. Like, really? I can't even imagine somebody like Mike Gallagher, my rep, saying something like that. I mean, there is, like, you've crossed that decorum line in a giant way. And the fact that the party hasn't reined that in and said, this isn't how we treat each other, I think both of those things are huge problems and exemplify the need to have those communications, those actual discussions about issues instead of just the one-sided, just spouting off.
Well, the whole nature that some people think that this is the inevitable path of society is that it's all going to be insults and sarcasm. So you may as well get in there and you know, be the best at it. When in fact, there are going to be, I think, enough of us who will kind of pull us back from that to say, come on, we're better than that. We don't need to support people who are like that. Maybe that was new and novel, you know, when Trump did it, but initially. But I don't think that's really the future of this country. I really don't.
It's old.
Oh yeah. Do you do much for holiday baking, cooking, anything like that?
I do actually. I hate cooking, but mm-hmm. I do like to bake. So last night I made an apple pie, which is the only thing I've eaten today. And that's why I'm so excited. it's got a lot of sugar in it. But I love to make Buckeye balls, you know, the peanut butter powdered sugar with the chocolate on the outside. And then I make my mom's molasses cookies and my grandma's monster cookies. Yeah, it's wow. fun.
Uh-huh. Well, here I thought I was doing so good in the Christmas baking end of things when Christina Lori over at Up North News was putting together some graphics on holiday traditions and New Year's resolutions. And she asked each of us, you know, about those. And, you know, Sherita Booker talked about, you know, watching Christmas Eve movies with her kids. And I talked about how every year, and this is mostly my wife that does this, but I help out, is that we prepare 200 peanut butter balls, 100 yeah. for each daughter, that are, you know, rolled out and then frozen and then chocolate dipped. And then that's frozen. So you have these delicious peanut butter balls, 100 for each daughter. And we put them in these tins and they really appreciate it. And then I see what Christina put up and she says, every Christmas, my mom and I bake kolaches, Polish jam-filled cookies. We started the tradition through my great-grandma Vicky of making thousands to give to everyone. Then she says, nowadays, we only make about 500 for our closest family and friends, but it's a nice tradition at Christmas time. Like, great. I make my 200 peanut butter balls, and she's out here going, oh, I only make 500 of these cookies. You know,
those are labor-intensive, too. That's like a multi-step cookie.
Yes, it is. I know. So I do my best, you know, but I know that I'm only going to get, you know, those kinds of treats for a little while. And then we're going to get to the first of the year. And the one daughter who is a personal trainer is going to be like, okay, break time's over. Let's go. You know, drop and give me 20. And back we go to it.
So Buckeye balls are peanut butter balls. And can I tell you that I have to hide them? Like I'll put them in like vegetable bags in the freezer so that the kids don't get them. Shh, don't tell my kids.
You don't think they listen, hang on your every word when you're on the radio?
No, I know they don't hang on my every word, especially when my words are, could you please empty the dishwasher?
Yeah, there is that. When we brought the peanut butter balls, the candy to my younger daughter in Kalamazoo, and she's got the 9-month-old and the 3-year-old, and the 3-year-old, you know, is 3, which means some days are kind of rough. And she was very happy for the candy, but she said, "You have one rule." When we let her go out on a date night with her husband, she said, "There's one rule. He can have as many peanut butter balls as you want to give them, you know, whether it's 1, 2, 3, whatever, but you absolutely cannot let him know where they come from," which in this case would be a tin in the freezer, but you know, it's like cookies in the cupboard or whatever. If he knows where they come from, he's just going to stand there and, you know, and demand that you have it. Whereas if the candy appears magically in your hand, you can't go someplace else and go, "Hey, go get me more of these," you know?
Genius. Yes.
It's all the little parenting tips and tricks, you know, that we try to pass along.
Mm-hmm.
even in the short time that we have them, we didn't have the car seat in the car this time, but I don't know if you've noticed this. You will certainly, you know, down the road. We've got these nice clean cars now. But if we ever have any of the grandkids who are still in car seats, and after a week, we take the car seat out. It's like a small landfill under there, yeah. You know, crushed up, you know, Cheerios or, you know, goldfish peanut butter crackers. Balls or, oh God, the goldfish crackers. Holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever came up with those has made more than a buck or two because they're just ubiquitous with little kids now. Mm-hmm. They're just a safe thing to have.
And thank goodness for sippy cups. I don't know what I would have done if my kids were born in the era before sippy cups.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, although again, I'm of an age where if we demanded, you know, a sip of this or that, they'd just put a little, you know, brandy on their finger, swab your mouth, and you'd be passed out in no time. You know, we grew up in a different era. There were no car seats. They put us in a peach box, you know, in mm-hmm. the back seat, and put a seatbelt around you if you're lucky, you know.
Yes.
And look, we're still here. So
we are.
We are. Yeah. we were the lucky ones. We'll take a break and then we'll come back. Robert Pine will be part of our hometown health segment, and we'll continue that through the hour as we wrap up one more hour before we have a few best of shows for the rest of the holiday season. So, Kristen, I don't want to forget at the end of the hour, but have a Merry Christmas, safe travels, and thank you so much for just really brightening so many of our shows this year.
It has been a wonderful 2022, and I'm so grateful to you, Pat. Hugs all around.
Thank you. All right, let's take this break. Hometown Health right after this on Up North News Radio.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back. This is Up North News Radio, and if it's Thursday, it means Dr. Kristen Lyerly is joining us with our hometown health segment, where Kristen brings on a guest in who finds some way or another to work with others to help us all feel a lot better in our community. There are things, even in this time of complete and utter seasonal affective depression and post-election weariness and RSV and flu and everything, Kristen always manages to find somebody who helps improve our hometown health overall, Kristen. And it's not just you. You actually found somebody else who does that as well as you do.
It's true. We have hometown health heroes all over the place. We just have to open our eyes and recognize who they are. And we have to recognize that there are so many things in our communities and in our worlds that affect our health. So today, we're going to talk with my friend Robert Pine, who is the director for the Norman Miller Center for Peace, Justice, and Public Understanding at St. Norbert College here in De Pere, Wisconsin. So I wanted to bring Bob on because we've had some incredible conversations in the past. I mean, he is, before I even let him say one word about himself or about what we're going to talk about today, he is a brilliant person with a very diverse, interesting background. He teaches courses at St. Norbert with about human rights and peace and justice. He leads students on trips. He's gone to Israel and the West Bank and South Africa. And, you know, speaking of Africa, he's done some incredible essential work in sub-Saharan Africa in peace building, conflict resolution, and pastoral education, which ties into his really interesting background of being a professor of theological studies back in Dallas back in the day, where he taught for 17 years and twice received a faculty award for teaching excellence. So my friend Robert Pine is, it's almost hard. I have to say all these words up front because he's going to have so many things to say once we get into this conversation, and you're just going to be rapt by him. Introducing Robert Pine. Welcome.
Thank you. That's too strong an introduction. Now everybody's hopes are up. And anyway, thank
it's
you.
All true.
It's great to be with you. It really is. And I look forward to having here in public the same kind of conversation that we have in private. So yeah, really nice to be with you. Thanks.
Yeah, you bet. So we initially talked a little bit about peace and justice and the intersection of those things with health. How do you see that happening?
Yeah, when I first took the position here at St. Norbert and my brother heard that I was going to be talking about peace and justice, he said, aren't those kind of opposites? Isn't it kind of one or the other? But when I think about peace and justice, I see them coming together if we have a big enough view of each. So that means peace in the broadest sense as shalom. And justice as the way things ought to be. In fact, in Psalm 85, it even envisions a time when peace and justice shall kiss. And to be there, it means that you think about the way life really should be. You think about the disruptors and you see them set aside. So in the ancient world, when they thought of peace or justice, they envisioned a time when you could plant your field and eat the fruit of it. You would have children and see them thrive and grow strong. Your neighbors don't attack you. You remain strong into your old age. And in that sense, it's easy to see how health and well-being contribute to that kind of a vision of the way things ought to be. And the same is true of our modern conception of the way things ought to be. I mean, if we're going to think about human rights as a guiding principle, people have always wanted these same experiences of human flourishing for themselves and to a great degree for their neighbors, and maybe not quite as much for their distant neighbors, but we recognize we all want really the same kinds of things. And the right to health as a basic human right was recognized by the World Health Organization in 1946 in its charter, saying the highest attainable standard of health as a fundamental right of every human being. So if we're going to talk about human rights, we need to talk about a right to health. And likewise, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948 saw a right to health care, a right to access, a right to the kind of standard of living that could allow access to health care and food and shelter and everything else. As these are basic human rights. Mm-hmm. So they're old ideals and they're contemporary ideals. It's the kind of thing people have always wanted and rightly want and deserve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we hear a lot of messaging about rights these days, whether it's human rights or women's rights or my rights. How do all of these concepts fit into the framework that you're creating at the Norman Miller Center?
Well, at the Norman Miller Center, trying to encourage a deep understanding of human rights and helping people to understand how to contribute collectively and individually to human flourishing, we recognize that human rights are universal, inalienable, and indivisible. It's common to think about three families of human rights, and the first is civil and political rights, and these come out of the Enlightenment. We think about freedom of speech and freedom of religion and freedom of the press, freedom from torture, right to life. These are basic rights. But also the second family of rights is directly connected to that. When we think about right to education and a right to cultural participation, a right to food and water and shelter and healthcare. Those rights articulated mostly in the 20th century, 19th and 20th century, because it was recognized that they're directly connected to everything else. You can't say that people have a right simply to speak their mind or a right to freedom of religion if they are in desperate need of shelter or of food. So Franklin Roosevelt, with his four freedoms, talking about the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom from want and freedom from fear.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have want and have real fear. People get rightly afraid of healthcare disparities, and people rightly fear not having access to the healthcare that they need. And so if we're going to be addressing freedom from fear, we address those things. So it's our aim to promote a full complement of human rights, not just the easy ones, but the ones that cause us to think about our responsibility for one another.
Well, that takes us to one of the great myths of American politics today. And that is that by lifting somebody else up and helping them secure the rights that they have not been able to enjoy, that somehow that takes away from the rights of others. Let's take healthcare, for example. This has been a ridiculous hot potato for generations in this country, out of some fear that if everybody has access to affordable quality health care, that other people are somehow going to have less or lose theirs, or maybe it's just that they find certain people undeserving. So, I mean, right. We don't just have to be talking about, you know, third world nations and the struggles there for certain human rights. We have a disconnect in this country helping our neighbors appreciate the rights that we have, because somewhere in this political machine, it became incorrectly a zero-sum gain kind of viewpoint on helping your rights is going to hurt my rights.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And when you think about those standards that I mentioned from the World Health Organization and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the U.S. was central in articulating those things. The U.S. was central in the founding of the UN, the founding of the WHO. Eleanor Roosevelt led the drafting committee for the UDHR. These are American values as much as they are international values. These are things that United States has been committed to, at least on paper, for a very, very long time, ever since their inception. But you're right, it's become a political football, and it's arranged individuals who seem to be for responsibility against those who are talking about our collective responsibility. If there's anything that the pandemic has taught us, it's that we're all in the same boat. Mm-hmm. And that you can't have something happening in one region of the world without affecting everybody. So we really should be pivoting now toward the fulfillment of what we say we've always stood for.
Mm-hmm. And all of those progressive values that go along with everything that you've said so far. It's very confusing to me, though, how the right side of our conservative leaders align themselves with religious groups that profess to believe in all of these things, but they don't act in accordance with all of the things that we're talking about today. And I know you share that frustration.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not difficult to imagine what it's like to treat people the way you wanted to be treated. And every religion has some form of what we call the golden rule, you know, that says treat others the way you want to be treated. And collectively, what do we want our world to look like? Do we want it to be the kind of place where people die like what Paul Farmer called the stupid deaths? A stupid death meaning there's help available, there's healthcare available, it's right there, but you can't get to it. That's a stupid death. We don't want that kind of world where that happens. We collectively want the kind of world where people flourish. Why would we not contribute to that? Why would we not contribute to a world in which peace and justice kiss?
And yet,
it's the way it ought to be.
And yet we are lacking that. And so when you say that the Norman Miller Center at St. Norbert cultivates awareness, compassion, and commitment to justice, you can see where somebody would rightly say, okay, how do you do that?
How do we get there from here?
Where do we start?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fortunately, this is something that lots of other countries have figured out. There are lots of other models about how to provide healthcare. We have tied it to jobs. And in our country, we connect having access to healthcare to having a certain kind of job that allows for it. But we recognize a lot of people fall through the cracks on that. So we have multiple delivery systems and insurances and everything else that it's not necessarily like that elsewhere in the world. And so I do think we can learn from them, and we can create the kind of system in which we are truly promoting health equity. If healthcare is a human right, then we need to think about non-discrimination. We need to focus on disadvantaged populations. We need to think about accessibility. We need to think about the right to participation in one's own healthcare decisions. So all those things factor in if, in fact, it's a human right. And we've always said it is. So really, again, it's time for us to live up to our words. And we're creative and smart people who can figure out, not just us, and the three of us, but as a society, we can figure out how to get the sort of healthcare to people who need it.
And be able to take those conversations out of simply the partisan political realm, because this shouldn't be a partisan issue.
It shouldn't be. I mean, we all want the same thing.
Exactly. Robert Pine is the director of the Norman Miller Center for Peace, Justice, and Public Understanding at St. Norbert's College. We're going to take a break here. We're going to continue our conversation and wrap up this hour's visit along with Kristen Lyerly. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is Up North News Radio. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
If you can't listen live, listen later as a podcast, wherever you get your favorite shows. Up North News Radio will be back in a moment. Across Wisconsin, this is Up North News Radio. Here is Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to Up North News Radio. This is Pat Kreitlow, along with Dr. Kristen Lyerly in our hometown health segment that we're bringing into a little overtime today because we're learning so much from our guest, Robert Pine, director of the Norman Miller Center for Peace, Justice, and Public Understanding at St. Norbert College. Kristen.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit with you, Bob, about what's coming up at the Norman Miller Center. There are some really beautiful things on the horizon. Talk to us about it.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for that. One that I think will be a really important evening will be on April 4th. We have the Spring Miller Lecture with Sherilyn Eiffel, who is the past president of the Legal Defense Fund for the NAACP. She is one of the nation's most prominent civil rights attorneys and human rights attorneys. She's an outstanding speaker and leader who has been on short lists for the Supreme Court and everything else. She is tremendous and will be here on April 4th. On April 18th, we're going to be recognizing Yom HaShoah, which is the Day of Remembrance for the Holocaust. And we're going to be bringing in Rebecca Erbilding from the U.S. Holocaust Museum. She was the lead historian on the recent PBS, the recent Ken Burns documentary on the U.S. and the Holocaust. So she's a historian on what happened with the U.S. during that time, ways in which there were anti-Semitic movements in the U.S. Prior to and during World War II, and then also some of the really terrific things being done in the U.S. To aid Holocaust victims, to try to bring an end to that. And so she'll be with us on April 18th. So those are a couple of things. In the meantime, we also have lots of things going on with a little smaller population, probably focused on students, as we lead conferences and film discussions and things like that. But those are the two main ones.
It's such a beautiful little resource, though, here in this small community where students can get together and have these complicated discussions about often difficult topics, and it can help to rectify some of the opposing ideas that people have in their heads based on the way we were raised or our faith or different things that maybe are in conflict in much the same way that we've already discussed them earlier in our conversation. And I really appreciate all of with anti-Semitism being so at the forefront right now. And of course, it's Hanukkah. So recognizing that we do have a substantial Jewish population here in Wisconsin. And, you know, there's a way to support cultures other than and religions other than those that we grew up with and to learn from others who speak from a different perspective.
Well, for sure. And we believe not only in interfaith understanding, but also in internationalist understanding, you know, to learn from other countries and cultures, but to build common ground together. You know, we don't just learn for the sake of a hobby. You know, and clearly you weren't implying that, but we learn in order to build the kind of world we want together. You know, what kind of a world do we want to have? I just came back from a sister cities trip to Åmål, Sweden, and was interacting there with folks who were doing refugee integration in that town. That town, it's smaller than any in our region, or I mean, immediate region of Brown County. It's about 12,000, but they've taken in a couple thousand refugees. And so we were talking about refugee integration and how to make that successful, and recognizing that that's an issue also in our community. Mm-hmm. Back to the issue of healthcare, one of the reasons Western Europe and the Scandinavian countries were such a draw for refugees during the Syrian refugee crisis and even before that, is that they had access to healthcare. They would have access to education. They would have access to the same rights as citizens, other than the political right to vote. That's the way it ought to be. You know, when somebody comes desperately to your shore, that they find in your hand the help that they need. And that's, again, the kind of agreement that we've come to internationally, but not necessarily one that we feel like living up to. So many ways in which we can promote this common cause of human flourishing, and to say this is what we believe in together.
If I could reverse engineer this for just a second, and we've talked a lot about the positive and proactive things that can be done, especially by a community. If I can take it to the individual level and ask, what habits should people be breaking that have made them, you know, less committed to human dignity and peace building and other important values? I mean, is it as simple as stop watching basic cable, or you know, what else can we do to stop making things worse?
Well, there are a lot of things we can do. TV habits is one, but we know that social media has put us all in bubbles. We listen to people we like. We click on stories that we think we'll be entertained by because we like them, not because we're challenged by them. I think one basic thing we can do is listen to each other, learn from each other, speak to those not like us, listen to what they want for themselves and their families, and recognize what we have in common. It's not easy to do that, especially in days when we're isolated both by winter cold and by continuing fear of pandemic. But we do need to connect across lines of difference.
Sure do. Robert Pine is the director of the Norman Miller Center for Peace, Justice, and Public Understanding at St. Norbert's College. So nice to visit with you, to meet you. Thank you again, and look forward to another conversation soon.
Thanks a lot. Great to be with you.
Yeah. Kristen, good work out of you.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean,
just know some pretty incredible people.
You do. I mean, now we know you. So I feel like I've done something right today. Finally, some personal notes to wrap up my 2022 with you. As I get set to take a little holiday time off, this officially marks the end of the third year of Up North News. Hard to believe it was 3 years ago we were getting set to launch just a website with 8 or 9 stories on it to get things started. Then my team of reporters went to work. We covered the early days of the 2020 legislative session, the early rumblings that this thing called the coronavirus was maybe going to make it here and be really serious. There was the 2020 presidential election and its aftermath, filled with lies and conspiracy and violence. And we're glad we could be here for that, because our founding was rooted in pushing back against misinformation, offering perspective, common sense, and facts rather than fear. Now, along with the news, we've rounded out our daily output with feature stories, videos, infographics, and even a daily radio show. We are honored you have found us to be a valued part of your daily scrolling and reading and watching and listening, and we'll work hard to keep you informed and do it with a little enjoyment along the way. So enjoy the holiday break. Let's make 2023 a year of good information and great conversation. Happy holidays. We'll see you in the new year.